Well, should we get started?
I guess we don't have anything to open with now. I mean, I got a few things, but I'll save them for like once we start getting into the opening and everything.
There'll be about 5 minutes before we we recorded our shorty for season. Maybe not 5 minutes. Maybe like two or three. But I think that should be enough. Sometimes that's more than they get. So all right, welcome to No Hugging, No Learning.
It's a show about one thing, watching Curb Your Enthusiasm for the first time.
I'm Tim Murphy.
And I'm Ted Hollowell.
And today we will be talking about Season 10, Episode 2, Side Sitting. But before that, what's the deal with stuff from our last episode? Happy New Year. We did not have any homework, but here are some trivia and tidbits about the episode. First, of course, we did mention this, I believe, maybe we didn't. I don't remember because it was so long ago. That this episode uses a joke about a late Happy New Year that is kind of repurposed from Seinfeld. I don't know if you remember from the dinner party episode. It starts with Elaine and Jerry in the apartment. Elaine going, "Hey, do you believe I got a Happy New Year today? It's February." And Jerry goes, "I once got a Happy New Year in March." And Elaine goes, "It's disgusting." And Jerry pretty much at the same time goes, "It's pathetic." And then they just kind of go on. It was one of those conversations that you just kind of like come in on before they get to the real plot of the scene.
Yeah,
I just thought it was interesting that Larry revisited it.
Yeah, I mean, he just is really, really adamant about people telling him Happy New Year after like January 6th.
Yeah, didn't he? I mean, he did a similar thing about Merry Christmas, didn't he? Or maybe I guess it would be Merry Christmas about him. For some reason, I thought I remembered something about that, like being too early. Maybe it's a totally different show. For some reason, just something I had like a little flash of memory about that. And I found this in the trivia section of IMDb. It is completely incorrect, I believe. It says, Larry decides to open a coffee shop right next to Mocha Joe's. Zoning laws would never allow that due to proximity.
Oh, my God.
I was like, if that were true, there would never be Starbucks next to Dunkin'. There would never be Starbucks next to Starbucks, which there are. There are Starbucks like across the street from other Starbucks a lot of times. Or McDonald's next to Burger King. Or any like that, whoever wrote this has no idea how zoning laws work.
I don't think the zoning laws would keep it from happening. I think the owner of the plaza would keep it from happening.
That might be true. Yeah, they might not rent to him. Or you got an open storefront. Like, I don't care. I'll get a couple bucks out of this guy for a couple months before he closes back down or whatever. But it might not. Yeah, maybe it'd be bad. Maybe that's bad business. Because you know what? I'm not going to say either way because I don't know about strip mall management.
Yeah, like this person doesn't know about zoning. Because you're not on a zoning board and you don't own a strip mall or a plaza. Neither do I. We don't know.
So I think this is entirely possible. I think you can open up whatever you want, wherever you want, as long as you've got the money. And that's the other thing Larry could flash too. And it seems like he's going to spend as much money. It doesn't matter. There's no dollar amount on his spite.
So he's going to spend his fortune on his spite store.
Yeah. So if the owner of the plaza or the landlord was like, I don't know. I mean, we already have a coffee shop. He would say, all right, how about $30,000 a month then? Whatever it is for, you know.
How about five times the rent?
Yeah. And then they would say, okay, you can open whatever you want there. So anyway, I just had to point out that bit of trivia BS from IMDb. And that is basically it. Although I do have some news, so I don't want you to skip that section.
Yeah, let's go to news.
I guess, you know, kind of big news is that I guess we were wrong about the Super Bowl commercial. I was totally expecting a Seinfeld Super Bowl commercial all night long.
Me too.
And nothing good.
Nothing at all. Nothing at all. I forgot about this entirely, actually.
But does that mean that Jerry was talking about the Curb finale being what he's coming back for involving the Seinfeld finale?
For
those of you not on Patreon, we've been talking about it. We're watching season 12 as it airs and doing short episodes over there on Patreon. So if you want to hear us cover it before we cover it on the Sacred Timeline, you know, we're doing it over there. And Larry is in a bit of legal trouble. And we're going into what he is definitively saying is the last season. And I'm like, is he rebooting the Seinfeld finale or something? Is he going to end up in jail at the end? Or is there going to be, I hope it's not a court case involving calling back characters, because he kind of already did that and Never Wait for Seconds. But I'm like, what do you have up your sleeve, Larry David, about, as Jerry said, something about the Seinfeld finale is coming. I don't know what to think. Just throwing it out there. I don't have a prediction like I did for after the Super Bowl thing flopped. I'm lucky there was no prop bet. Like, what commercials do you think there's going to be? Oh, Jerry Seinfeld's going to appear in a commercial. Put the mortgage on it.
Get a call Monday morning. Hey, so we own your house now.
Yeah. Hey, it's DraftKings. We're turning your house into a casino.
Hey, it's DraftKings. We're just giving you this call as a courtesy while we tow your house.
Yeah. Or Jamie Foxx shows up at my house. Hey, I live here now, man. What? 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 Get out. Another little bit of news is that Larry David was a guest on Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. And
I listened to this. Have you listened to it?
Yeah.
Oh my God. I know, because normally you're about 2.5 years behind on these.
Well, when there's an important one, it jumps to the top of the podcast queue. I go right there. Yeah.
See, I didn't want to listen to this. I didn't want to listen to this so much.
Why?
And I'm like, man, because Larry he's funny, but he's insufferable to listen to because it's just me cursing the whole time. I'm like, you miserable fuck. But my God, if this wasn't, I think, the best episode of Conan's podcast. It was so funny.
It was absolutely hilarious. And Conan was like, it made me realize what Conan's genuine laugh is, because now I know that he's like faking like basically every other laugh, because the way he was laughing at Larry David, I don't think I've ever heard him laugh like that before.
And my God, the moment where Larry's like, I like to hang out around comedians and like invite comedians to parties, and Conan counts, well, do I count as a comedian? And everyone in the room, Larry, Sona, and Matt Gourley, I think Matt Gourley might be on Zoom, but they're all just like, oh no.
Don't do this.
No, Conan, no. And Larry himself is like, And it pains him to go. I mean, you know, comedians, comedian writers, people in comedy. And Larry's definition of comedians encompassing everyone is how I encompass, you know, wrestlers, you know, people in wrestling, referees, announcers, commentators, because people sometimes just include wrestlers. And I'll be like, is that all people in wrestling?
And it was great that Larry did eventually concede, you count. You count.
Yeah, he's like,
although
you count.
It might have just been being nice, but I don't think Larry would do that.
Nice. I don't know. I think it was being nice.
It could be. It could have been too awkward even for Larry. But yeah, I mean, it is a hilarious episode, and you get a little bit of Curb and Seinfeld lore. You know, I mean, I loved the part that Larry cracks up about so much, and I don't know why he was laughing so hard, but it was about, they talk about the joke about the two form and the formal, you know, the first joke he used to tell when he'd get up on stage that he put in the Curb pilot was, you know, you seem like a good crowd. We seem to be getting along. Do you mind if I use the two form with you? And that used to be his litmus test for the audience. And if they liked it, he would continue. And if they didn't like it, he would berate them. And that cracks Larry up to no end, just remembering that. But everyone's chuckling about that. And we get a little, he tells the story about chewing out his boss at SNL and leaving and then just coming back on Monday morning like nothing happened, which is hilarious because they turned that into a Seinfeld, you know, an early Seinfeld episode. So yeah, highly recommended, the Larry David episode of Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. And the final bit of news I have a Michael Perry update from the Reddit thread I started about these weird bits of trivia that started popping up on IMDb about Michael Perry gave Larry David this idea because they were in a hot tub talking about blood. And I'm like, these sound like such bullshit. And so a couple of people commented on the Reddit thread I started. Ha ha, I was wondering the same thing. There are more entries in season 11. What a weird thing to do. And so we can maybe look forward to more unless this person mission was accomplished. Just came across these myself. Agree, they looked suspicious. No other instances of these stories elsewhere online. I asked for IMDb to remove them, and they did.
Oh, my God. Wow.
Michael Perry scrubbed from existence. Thank goodness. And I made sure to tell that person, thank you for your service. So we'll see, you know, if he keeps popping up in trivia. But that may be the end of it. And that's all the news I have.
Okay, I got one thing before we get into a disclaimer and everything, because this is a post that I can link you to, or I can link it down in the description, maybe. I don't know if I want to do that. But this popped up on the Curb subreddit a couple of days ago, post titled, "The Curb Rewatch Podcast is such a disappointment. It's so hard to listen to because of Jeff."
What? Wow.
Yeah. And I'll read a little bit here. It's a long post detailing their very specific problems with it. And let me get into it. I know this has been discussed here a lot, but I need to rant about this. Rewatch podcasts have been a trend lately, and I'm all for it. There have been some good, and he gives examples of Pod Meets World, talking about Boy Meets World, and some bad, an example of Talking Sopranos. More on this later. I love the idea of cast crew going episode by episode to bring new light and commentary and sharing feelings about episodes. That said, not all can be a podcaster. It takes a certain skill that some celebrities just don't have. Jeff Garlin is one of those, which is interesting because he did have a podcast of his own. He might be one of the worst podcasters I have listened to, next to Steve Sherpa from Talking Sopranos. In my opinion, the Boy Meets World rewatch podcast is the best example of how to create a successful rewatch pod. Then they go into a couple of different reasons. One of them being no interruptions, mostly. It's going to happen time to time. People want to get their point out and will occasionally interrupt or talk over somebody. However, the three hosts are pretty much respectful of one another. Jeff can't help himself interrupting Susie.
That tracks.
And then this is... Wait, there is a comment here that I wanted to touch on as well. And then this one, they aren't scared to criticize episodes, scenes, writings, acting, etc. I don't like when rewatch podcasts are just a circle jerk of everybody praising each other. Yes, it's good to be supportive and happy with your work, but it's okay to say what you don't like about it. For example, I was a little disappointed when Steve Carell was on Office Ladies. It was just an hour of "we are all amazing" and a superficial conversation. When Trina McGee, who played Angela from Boy Meets World, came on the pod, she didn't hold back her honest feelings, especially the fact that she was a black woman on a mostly white show. So I just left a comment because I don't post on Reddit anymore for the podcast, because whenever I was doing it in the Seinfeld subreddit, no one really interacted. We didn't get much new listeners from it. So, and I mean, posting in a fan subreddit promoting your thing is not a good way to promote your thing.
Dangerous.
But I just commented saying, I'm not here to plug my own thing, and didn't even mention it by name, comma, but as the host of a non-actor-hosted Curb/Seinfeld rewatch podcast, this is refreshing to hear. And it is. It's very refreshing to hear that people are just fucking sick of actor-hosted rewatch shit.
Yeah, it seemed like a blank check, like, oh, here, we can make some sweet ad money and just do all this, especially it being on iHeart. You know, it's like such an obvious cash grab in that case, like even more obvious now. So they're saying that Susie and Jeff don't criticize the show at all?
They're saying, I think they just recap it, but Jeff interrupts Susie all the time.
And that's his main gripe.
Yeah, he goes on to say, I realize they've only discussed two episodes plus the original special, but it's so hard to listen to. I honestly cannot listen to 12 seasons of Jeff going, by the way, every second.
Honestly, that's not surprising because that is Jeff's MO. Like, he used to be on Doug Loves Movies a long time ago, and that's all he would do is like interrupt Doug. And it was funny because Doug would get, you know, so upset about it and be stymied by it. And I felt like he wouldn't keep having Jeff on if he didn't think there was some comedy in it, like him yelling at Jeff and Jeff, you know, being apologetic, but then not stopping interrupting him and stuff like that. It was a funny back and forth. But then one episode, because he had a few guests that would do this, and one episode he had on Jeff Garlin, Pete Holmes, and TJ Miller, who were like the three most interrupting motherfuckers that he had on that show.
Oh,
and he had them
fuck
all on
that
at the same
entire
time.
Assortment of people.
But it was pretty hilarious. I mean, because they're all the same person, they got along so well, and somehow it worked, but it was just chaos, but it was hilarious.
But I do want to give a shout out to the OP of the Reddit post, Dancing Briefcase, who posted this, as well as person who replied to me, Munder Difflin, who subscribed to us because of my comment.
Sweet.
So you let know, us you... know if you hear this, or maybe you've already given up on us as well.
You just reminded me of another little bit of news, is that I was the guest on a podcast about Curb.
That's right. I'll tell you what, I'm going to put a timestamp of when we actually start talking about Curb on this episode in the description, because we've got a lot of preamble.
But remember, there's 18 minutes or something of that's going to be cut out immediately.
I mean, I'm already on minute 15. I started a new record on my end.
Oh, okay. Well, 15 is, I mean, at least it's show, you know, at least it's not our usual bullshit. But anyway, I just want to plug that I was on Top of the Hops. It is a podcast where this guy has guests on. His name is Mike Michaels. No, it's not. Let me look. I should have looked up the info because he has guests on and you bring a beer that you like and you talk about a top five list. It's the final season of Curb. He wanted to have the only active at the time Curb podcast on the internet that he could get. And
that he could get. I don't think he's getting Jeff Garland or Susie Essman.
It does not seem like it. But not only is he a big beer fan, which I am too, and a big fan of Curb and Seinfeld, which I am too, and we are too. He's also a huge fan of wrestling, so he made sure to point out how much he loves your wrestling talk.
Hey, what's his name? Mike Michaels. Shout out Mike Michaels.
Let me pull up one of his. Oh, Michael Riker. There you go.
Michael Riker. All right. Shout out to Mike Michaels Riker.
Mike Michaels Rikers.
I am admin on this.
Okay, so his YouTube page is just at Top of the Hops. That's probably the best place to find it. And yeah,
I'll link to your episode in the description.
At Top of the Hops on YouTube. Wrestling and beer enthusiast who will do watch-alongs and beer reviews. And my favorite thing of all, top five lists. But only if you have a beer in tow. So I did bring one of my favorite Pittsburgh beers to talk about our top five episodes. And it is shocking just how much of the same person we are. This is my New York doppelganger.
Wow.
So I really encourage people to listen because it's an entertaining episode for that reason. Our minds just kept getting blown by our similarities.
Was this a video podcast or was this just audio?
It is video.
Okay. I'll link to the YouTube then.
Sweet. So I think that's it. That's the news. But at least it was really news, you know.
It was. We had a lot of big news.
A lot of catching
mostly because
up to
we
do.
We haven't talked at more than 20 minutes in 3 weeks.
Yeah, that's true. That's probably why there was so much news stacking up.
Okay, if you have never listened to us before, we are not a research-heavy show, despite the last, which time should I use? Should I use your time or my time?
I think your time is the more accurate one.
Despite the last 19 minutes being almost exclusively research and bullshit, we like to have our questions pop up naturally in the run of the episode and assign them to ourselves the week following as though we are giving ourselves homework. I've never seen these episodes before. Tim has never seen these episodes before. If we miss anything, if we egregiously skip over anything, please send us an email or send us a tweet. It's at nohugging on Twitter, at nohugging_nolearning on Instagram, or nohuggingnolearningshow@gmail.com. All three of those links are in the description. If you like us, you can give us a 5-star rating and a written review on Apple Podcasts. You can give us a 5-star rating after listening to the episode on Spotify. I don't know if that's a new change they made. I just noticed that you can't rate an episode or rate a podcast until you listen to it.
No, they instituted that right off the bat, I remember. But
oh, really?
Okay. Here's the thing that people discovered. You only have to listen to like 5 seconds. Unless they've changed that you have to listen to a whole episode or whatever. I know that, you know, I was able to give us our 5-star rating after like a minute or something. I think I let it go a minute just to make sure. And yeah, so
that'd be funny if the amount of stars you were able to give was based on how long you listened. So you can only give it 5 stars if you listen to a full episode, but you can give it 1 star if you listen to 1 second.
Oh, that would be awful because how many people turn stuff off? That would be the worst. Oh, that sucks.
1 star.
1 star.
Only listen to 1 second. Well, yeah, duh. That's why you thought it sucked.
But yeah, that'd be great if it was next to the rating, how long they listened to the episode. It's like, oh, that guy didn't even give it a chance.
That would be
the trade-off.
That's nice.
And I might
or if they listen to multiple episodes, listens occasionally.
Right. Let us know. Yeah.
Apple Podcasts, Spotify, if you like us. If you like us a little bit more than that, you can visit us over on Patreon. It's patreon.com/nohugging. Where for $5 a month, you can get early access to extended versions of every episode and doing too much shorty episodes of season 12. We're kind of hopping across multiple timelines now. Classic DTM. So yeah, that's up on Patreon, $5 a month, patreon.com/nohugging. You can actually get the first 7 days free and no promo code or anything. All of that linked down in the description. But Tim, that's not the only way they can support the show, right?
That's right. You can start your own podcast on Libsyn. Just go to Libsyn.com, use the promo code HUGGING. You'll get up to 2 months free. You'll help out your old buddies, Tim and Ted, and you'll begin a journey with a hobby that may earn you some scratch later on, but at the very least, you know, you'll just be having fun with, you know, having conversations with whoever you want to talk to on the microphone. Start your podcast with Libsyn. They're great. Customer service is great. They'll get your podcast literally everywhere. You'll start discovering your podcast in places you didn't even submit it to, so and have no control over.
Why are they pulling that artwork? That hasn't been a thing in years. Well, sorry.
Yeah, but someone's listening, and you get great stats and stuff like that. So, begin your podcast journey with Libsyn. Use the promo code HUGGING.
All of that being said, Season 10, Episode 2, Side Sitting. Original air date, January 26, 2020. And if you're looking in TV Guide that night, you're going to see Larry's lawyer tries to settle the Alice situation, period. Larry gives Susie an extravagant gift, period.
It's not bad. I don't think it's that bad.
It's not bad.
Maybe we don't have to do anything. We'll see when we get to the end. So we open in Larry's lawyer's office. He's meeting about the sexual harassment lawsuit. The lawyer says it's not going to be a problem. Larry is not interested in a settlement, though, because there's no justice if she walks away with anything, because he didn't do anything, you know, that approaches sexual harassment in his mind. And so as they're wrapping up the meeting, I like this little interaction. The lawyer is like, all right, well, so, you know, if anything comes to mind after the meeting, give me a call. And Larry goes, if I do give you a call, and I very well might, are you going to charge me for that? And he goes, well, around, you know, here, we don't like the client to be feel inhibited, like they can't call, or, you know, we want you to feel open that our time is available to you. And Larry goes, so you're going to charge me? And he goes, yeah. I love that he tried to hem and haw around, and Larry doubled down. He's like, yeah, definitely, of course. Yeah, I'm a lawyer.
Of course I'm going to charge you. Yeah, I'm a lawyer.
Of course I will. Larry asks to use the bathroom that is connected to the lawyer's office, but as he says in the business, motion denied. He won't let, even though Larry says, I'm like a murderer. I don't leave any trace that I was in a bathroom, but he still says, no go. You can use the one out in the lobby.
I want to point out, because we're recording this the same day as we recorded the shorty episode for The Lawn Jockey, season 12, episode 2. It's just weird that there's two bathroom episodes.
It's just an important part of everyday life. You know, I can understand why Larry wants to explore the minutiae of having to go to the bathroom. I mean, we see him. There are several bathroom storylines in every season, it seems like.
Yes, it's interesting that difference in Larry's bathroom behavior between the episodes as well.
In what way?
In the way of, in season 10, he is like a murderer. He's cleaning up. He's level with the counter, wiping down to make sure there's no hairs whatsoever. I mean, we'll get into that in a second. But in season 12, he's wafting soap everywhere just to make sure the stink doesn't get out.
Yeah. He's taking dumps in public now, which it seems like maybe is not the case in what he was going to do in the lawyer's bathroom. We don't know. But out in reception at Swindell and Babbitt, which I always think it's funny when somebody in a business like lawyer, maybe you're just a businessman, has the name Swindle, you know, because it means literally like scam out of money. Like my favorite bridge in Pittsburgh is the Swindell Bridge. It might be Swindell, but it was named after a businessman, and I always thought that was hilarious. Swindell Bridge. So over at Swindell and Babbitt, Larry, you know, gives his parking ticket to the receptionist to get validated, and she kind of chuckles at it, you know, because Larry is so rich. And he even asks for, like, he's like, oh, this is only good for an hour. I was here at least for an hour 10, you know. And so again, a billionaire, a cheap ass billionaire, very relatable. He says it's not about the money. It's not about being cheap. It's about the fact that he doesn't want to reach into his pocket while he's driving his car, which is why he says that homeless people at intersections don't make any money, because no one wants to reach into their pocket. I mean, I do hate doing that, but it's more about the cheapness for me. In the lobby downstairs in the building, he gets a call from what sounds like Dr. Bahn to me.
B-A-H-N is what the subtitle said.
I see. That makes so much sense because she's Asian. That's that makes a lot of sense.
I mean, every time I did speech to text, it came out Dr. Bond, like James Bond. And I had to go back and correct it every time.
And I just wrote B-O-N just because I was like, I don't know. And anyway, a test came back that she didn't like, so they want to test Larry for thyroid cancer. They want him to come in. So he goes in to get an MRI. I thought it was weird. I've gotten something like this before, and I know that, you know, metal is very bad. He's like in his full, he's wearing his shoes, he's wearing clothes. Like, aren't you normally in a gown?
I think you're in a gown. Kind of
You're naked. Like, they don't want anything like rivets in your pants to like mess with. It's a giant magnet, you know?
Yeah, because like, I don't know if all the metal on your clothing will shoot outward or shoot inward. Neither sound fun.
Yeah, I mean, you're in a circle, so it could go either way. It all just depends, I guess, where the magnet is at that point. But yeah, he's like fully dressed. I mean, I just found that weird. So post-MRI, Larry's playing poker with the boys, and SWAT is there, which I think is awesome that SWAT is back. It wasn't until the credits, though, that I recognized him. I was like, is that SWAT? I don't know. But sure enough, in the credits, he's listed. And Leon is there, and Richard Lewis, and Cousin Andy, and Jeff, of course. Cousin Andy asked Larry why he missed their, it was like a art auction of art by prisoners or something like that. And Larry's like, oh, I guess I got lost in the mail. Oh, I really would have gone to that. Meanwhile, Jeff gives him a knowing glance. And we finally reached the point where the segment is named after. We are, you know, remember we kind of changed Newman's mail sack to Lost in the Mail for a little bit there because of this episode. Because someone told us, maybe Nick Kudla told us that Lost in the Mail would become something. So,
oh, man.
Yeah. So we're finally there. And knowing glance from Jeff. And Susie told Jeff to tell Larry that her birthday is in a week, which is hilarious. And Larry calls her shameless, which is accurate. I mean, tell your rich friend that my birthday is in a week. And I want a camera. Even tells her what she wants. She wants a camera. But Larry is so thoughtful, he's already gotten her something. And it's going to be a surprise. And Larry wins the hand for poker. He got three of a kind on the river, the last flip, the last flop, whatever they call it in Texas Hold'em. And they're like, oh, wow, you're the luckiest guy. And he's like, yeah, lucky, right. And he confesses to them that, you know, he might have cancer. And Jeff immediately says, I got to tell you, I'll tell you right now, if you do have cancer, I can't be your friend anymore. I'm just not a cancer friend. And Richard Lewis says the same thing. They're not cancer friends. And so Larry says, let's just make a pact right now. A no cancer friend reciprocity pact. If any of us get cancer, we'll cut
stop
each other out of
friends with you.
Stop
yeah.
Friends with you. I liked what SWAT said. He was like, does he say his dad had cancer?
He maybe does. I don't know.
He's like, my dad had cancer and I didn't talk to that motherfucker again. And Larry's like, oh, wow. Did he get better? He's like, I don't know. Because he never talked to him again. I thought that was hilarious.
Are you a poker guy? Have you ever played poker?
Yes, during the poker craze of the early 2000s.
Oh, I was God, yeah.
Way into poker. Yeah, I mean, you just couldn't be. Couldn't be into poker.
Everyone was into poker. And you were like in the prime of like, man, we're going to go to Atlantic City and we're going to enter the World Series of Poker tournament.
Did not do that. But I played poker in Atlantic City, and it was the stupidest, quickest $60 I've ever spent in my life. I swear, it was like the dumbest.
Was it a $60 buy-in?
It must have been, because there's no way I would have thrown all that down. And then it must have been like, you know, people must have been raising. People saw a mark the second I sat down, because I had played is poker with my buddies for change. Like, we'd have change, like, I'll raise you a quarter, raise you a dime, whatever. And that's how we played poker, and it was fucking fun. It was a great time playing poker that way. That's a blast. And then I'm like, oh, sure, I play with my friends. I guess I'll go and, you know. So we're in Atlantic City. My buddy runs into somebody he knows, and he's like, oh, we're going to play poker at the, I don't remember where it was. And so we follow him like through the casino, up some stairs, down a hallway. We're like in the hotel, and then we exit and like go walk through a ballroom. We're like, we're not where regular people go. And all of a sudden we end up in a room with like a bunch of poker tables. It looked like poker table storage room, but there was a dealer there and people playing poker. And I was like, oh, yeah, hell, I'll sit down. Sure, yeah, I like playing poker. And this is going to be a fun, friendly game, right? And my first hand, I'm out $60. And I'm like, all right, well, thanks for your time. and I just sit there as my buddy continues to play. Because he, you know, was smart and shrewd and knew that this was not the same as, like, sitting in around the kitchen table and listening to music. And, yeah, like, I didn't even have anything, I don't think. Maybe I had... I don't even think I had a pair. I don't think I had anything, but I just kept like throwing. Every time someone raised, I was like, oh, I'll raise. I'll, you know, I maybe check once, like check. I knew you could do that and not put any money down, but if you wanted to stay in, you had to like throw a bunch. And so I just kept raising, and then I was like, I have nothing. See you gentlemen later. Nice to meet you. It's the stupidest moment of my life, maybe. What about you, poker fan?
I have only played a couple of times, and it was with my uncle and dad whenever I was real young, because my uncle got this poker set from somebody.
Yeah.
And we would play Texas Hold'em. And man, that was, you know, probably 20 years ago, and I haven't played since. I would love to like relearn how to play, because it is fun.
I'd love to have a friendly game, even for a little bit of money. Like, you know, but I'd love to have a friendly game like Larry seems to. I don't want to break the bank every week, but
yeah,
just to get together and you know, shoot the shit and have a drink or two and play poker would be, it looks like a blast. You know, it's a fun thing to do. I don't know. Maybe I can get the neighborhood dads in on a poker game. So over at Lunetta, we were at Lunetta all day last episode. Now we're in the backside that I think I talked about. That so Lunetta all day was on one side and Lunetta was on the other, and they shared a kitchen. This one was like the little bit nicer of like a dinner place. Larry is there meeting Cheryl, and he sits down at a wobbly table. We know he hates that because Mocha Joe had wobbly tables. So he decides to side sit so he can lean on the table and it won't wobble. But, you know, Cheryl is not, she's like, should you really be doing that? And he's like, it was a big deal. But meanwhile, Larry's mailman walks in. John Daly, the hilarious comic actor. Did you recognize him?
Yes,
yeah,
of course.
Of course, of course. I think we've even talked about him before, because I remember maybe it was just apropos of me getting the notification that his like British shock comedian act came through Pittsburgh, Johnny Doyle, where, you know, like the red, white and blue pill tour or something like that he was doing.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, which would have been hilarious to see, but I didn't go see it. But yeah, this guy is, I loved him on Kroll Show. Him and Nick Kroll as like those trust fund guys, those like coked out trust fund guys were like just absolutely hilarious. Yeah, it's John Daly. His name in the show is Lionel, though. Lionel the mailman. You know, he does take notice of Larry and Cheryl there. Cheryl, though, they decide to, you know, talk about what happened, you know, them hooking up in the last episode. And Cheryl wants to end it. But Larry has, to bring the poker metaphors back, he's got kind of an ace in the hole. He brings up his test results. He's like, well, you know, I'm being tested for cancer. And it's not really changing Cheryl's mind. I loved the interaction where she's like, oh, well, I hope that's okay. He's like, well, you know, this is cancer. She's like, well, a lot of people get tested. And he goes, not for cancer. And she goes, yeah, they do. But, and so that was a funny line, you know, not for cancer. Yeah, every day people do get tested. I love the way he kept saying, and this is for cancer. Yeah, but this is for, you know, it's cancer. You know what? Cancer. I just thought the way he kept saying that was absolutely hilarious. So, but it's not really changing Cheryl's mind at all. That, you know, but he even says like, oh, well, you know, I'll travel like you always want to. And I'll get a nurse so I can complain to the nurse and not to you. What if you knew that I was going to die in 2 years? Would you get back together with me? And, you know, again, Cheryl is like, you know, we're good. I think we're good. And so Larry goes back to sitting across from Cheryl. And the frustration here is some of the best acting Larry David's ever done, because they're looking at the menu and Cheryl goes, oh, what are you going to get? And he goes, I don't give a fuck. I mean, just like.
This was such a good delivery.
Yeah.
Of, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah. Because it wasn't
it's
about.
It's more like a, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah. I don't give a fuck. I can't even do it because it was so good. Like, I don't give a fuck. Like he was just so angry in that moment. And that's how it came out. And it was just great. It was just a fantastic read. And some of the best acting, like I said, that he has done. Over at Jeff's, Milos is there, the handyman, working on Jeff's deck. And he's actually doing some work on Larry's coffee shop, too. And Larry brings Susie's gift into the house and sets it down. Meanwhile, you know, since it's not happening with Cheryl, Jeff tells him, like, well, you got to get back out there. You got to start dating. And just like you can't joke about anything these days, Ted, you also can't date in this climate, because you can't make a move. You can't even have sex anymore because you're going to go to jail. Do you know that, Ted? That's where men, that's what men are dealing with. Men like us. This storyline is like, especially because it seems like it was written by dudes. Like last week we talked about the moral of the story was women do sometimes lie. And now it's basically like the comedians who are like, you can't say anything anymore.
Yeah. Now it's, like, it's, yeah. It's all women lie, and if you do anything funny, you're going to get canceled.
Exactly. And if you even touch them, then, again, they'll call the police right away.
It's like it's can't... just every fucking, like, bad, like, right-leaning trope.
Yeah. I mean, it's and it because we're 4 years removed from Me Too at this point, and we found out that, like, well, who's he talking to? Jeff Garlin, who lost a job over what must have been semi-believable allegations. You know,
yes.
Like, people have lost jobs. Like, you know, we've decided that, like, as a society, we're going to believe women. You know, it's like, that doesn't mean that we're not going to believe men. It's that we're going to give stories equal weight now.
It's the whole idea of people thinking, well, if we're gonna believe this thing, that devalues this other thing.
Yes.
No, it's an unrelated argument.
Yeah, both things can be true, you know.
Can't tell you how many people in 2024 I still see that think when people think that Black Lives Matter, that means, obviously you think other lives don't matter. No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying Black lives need a little more care right now because people are just shooting them.
Ted, take that last part off, and I'm giving you a staff writing position on Curb for these last few episodes. I think we have something here. Yeah, it's and also, you know, somehow comedians can still find a way to be funny without being fucking creeps like Patton Oswalt or
a good comedian can still find a way to be funny despite hurdles like in society and hurdles in writing and climate everything.
Yeah.
They can still find ways to be funny. And I know we talked about it at the beginning of this episode. Look at the Larry David episode of Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend.
Because it's funny and it doesn't cross a line.
Exactly. I mean, they cross lines, but it's because they're friends with each other.
Like, tell me why South Park is still on. Tell me why Anthony Jeselnik is still out there and touring. It's like, because they found a way to be funny in this climate, as you want to say, you know, and like, and still, you know, can hold a mirror up to society or whatever. You know, I mean, for that matter, I mean, Larry David is still on, you know, for crying out loud. It's like he's found, and I know this is a character, but it's still like, you know, it's Larry David playing Larry David for crying out loud. That's one thing that you brought up, Conan, at the beginning where he talks about how much he loves Larry David, the character. I love that guy, you know? Conan's like, you are a lot like that guy. And he's like, I take that as a compliment because I love that guy. but it was just so funny. Like, man, you can't even talk to women these days. It's like, yeah, just try not being a fucking creep. Plus, he's old and bald. That's the other thing Larry brings up. So dating is just out for him. He can't make a move because he'll be arrested immediately, and he's old and bald. But Jeff says what I've always said about Larry is that he's rich, and rich trumps everything. Meanwhile, Susie comes in and gets her birthday gift. It is a giant, scowling portrait of her, photorealistic portrait of Susie just sitting there scowling, and she loves it. It is the best gift anyone has given anybody. Jeff has the opposite reaction. And it is not a camera. He is so unhappy that he has to look at this thing now. As Susie goes out and chews out Milos for, I guess, the wrong colored deck or something like that. And they give another, poor son of a bitch didn't even stand a chance. I like when they mumble about that, like that about people. I think he said it to Jeff once after Susie chewed them out. He's like, you know what people say when you leave a conversation? Poor bastard. I just there's just something about that, you know, saying a word that way that I like. Poor son of a bitch didn't stand a chance. So back at home, Lionel the mailman shows up, and he is upset that Larry is telling people that things are getting lost in the mail because Andy and Cassie, which I noticed, or I think we might even say Cassie. Larry has a daughter.
Larry's actual real daughter is named Cassie with two Z's.
Yeah.
In the show, it's Andy and Cassie.
Oh,
David.
It is Cassie. Okay. Mm-hmm. I thought he might have just like slurred the Z's into an S or something like that. Okay. Still, might be an homage. You never know. Yeah. And they told him that he's like, that you're blaming on getting things lost in the mail, even though he has never lost a piece of mail. He wants Larry to tell Andy and Cassie the truth. But, you know, while he's like kind of having this little showdown with Larry, Larry just can't take being told off by somebody in shorts seriously. But it's part of the uniform, as Lionel tells him. And it's at that point that Larry gets a phone call that he does not have cancer. So he's very happy about that. Back in Swindle's office, Larry shows up to a meeting, it seems like a little bit early, and uses the bathroom adjacent to the office. He uses the in-office bathroom and leaves no trace.
Even down to the point of taking his monogrammed paper towel to dry his hands, and instead of throwing it away, he balls it up and puts it in his pocket.
Yes, not even going to put something in the trash that is there. And he does find a little hair on the sink that he removes. So very meticulous about cleaning everything up in the bathroom. So when his lawyer shows up, Larry is just kind of sitting there like nothing happens. And they find out that Alice, his assistant, wants to meet and talk it over. And, you know, I like the lawyer giving him advice. You know, he's like, just sit there and listen. Larry's like, yeah, listen, whatever. But Larry is game to like get out of this. He'll do whatever it takes. He'll, you know, he'll give her complete lip service about all of this. So yeah, no problem. He's into it. He knows the plan. Just get out of the lawsuit and settle things with Alice. And he gets up for the lawyer gets up to go get a tissue. And when he comes out, he notices that, well, he just asks Larry, did you use my bathroom? And Larry denies it because he knows he is cleaned up as well as he could. Over at reception, Larry admits to the receptionist that he used the lawyer's bathroom. And I think the lawyer, the receptionist even admits that she has too, because it's just better to fly private, I think they say, which I like.
Yeah, she says, why fly public when you can fly private?
There you go, yeah. And Larry talks about, you know, being able to find good bathrooms anywhere and invites her on a toilet hopping date. They'll drive around the city and look at bathrooms together.
Find the most disgusting toilets.
Yeah. By the way, did you recognize the receptionist?
I don't know if I did.
It's Terry Polo, who is the star of the Fockerverse. She's Ben Stiller's wife in Meet the Parents, Meet the Fockers,
God.
And
really?
Little Fockers. Yeah, huh. Yeah. I thought that was... So, I mean, the Fockerverse was already within our, you know, Patreon movie recap purview because Ben Stiller, of course, has already been on. But now it's really in there because we got, you know, if De Niro shows up or something, or Dustin Hoffman, we'll really... Oh, wait, Dustin Hoffman already did show up. I forgot. He was one of Larry's guardian angels up in heaven.
Oh, shit.
Jeez. Do we have to skip right to Meet the Fockers? Do we have to skip Meet the Parents and go right to Meet the Fockers? Maybe.
But no, we just only are going to talk about Little Fockers.
That's the only one I've never seen, actually. So I wouldn't mind that.
You've
awful.
Only seen Little Fockers?
No, I that's the only one I haven't seen. Sorry.
Oh, only one you haven't. Okay. Yeah, I was like, how is Little Fockers the only one in the series that you've seen?
I like watching the worst of a series. I just go right there. Yeah, no, that's the only one I haven't seen, so I'd probably be okay with that. Yeah. So Terry Polo, good to see her. So over at, what did I write? MJ. Oh, Mocha Joe's. Okay. Yeah, Larry is over at his coffee shop and Mocha Joe's, and he runs into Ted, who heard about the side-sitting with Cheryl from his mailman. Were you side-sitting with Cheryl? And Larry's like, I side-sit everyone. It's not a big, I was, but it's only because I sit next to, and Ted's like, I've never seen you side-sitting before. And Larry, you know, sticks to his guns and says, that's just the way I sit. Larry gets a call. I guess it's at that point that Jeff calls to complain to Larry about the painting. He hates it. As if it wasn't clear before. Over at Rita's apartment, that's the receptionist's name, we find out. Larry and Rita navigate consent on a cell phone recording. They you know, Larry sets up a, like, basically like a deposition. Yeah, I know. This was, again, more like, hey, this fellas, this is what it's like now, right?
This was uncomfy.
Yeah, because he's like, I would like to put my hand around your shoulder. And she said, that's okay. I mean, it was just like... It was basically like the Siri bit from the first episode of season 12, like 4 years too late or whatever. And also too much of a caricature of what he thinks dating life really is like, you know? I don't know. Maybe I just was never as creepy as Larry David, but it just seems like unnecessary. And they eventually reach an impasse of how far Larry can go. And what's funny is, like, he's parodying something you should kind of be doing anyway. Like, there is a point, you know, you don't want to take all the romance out of it and all the spontaneity out of it, but, like, asking for consent's not that much of a joke.
Yeah. I'll even, you know, Tim, I'll go as far as to say it's not a joke.
It's not a joke. Whoa.
I know.
Am I talking to Ronan Farrow?
Whoa.
Jeez.
I will even say it's something that you should ask for.
Yeah. You should make clear that, you know, that you both consent to what is happening. That's not a joke, kids. Yeah.
Why,
and so
why did it sound like you were turning your hat backwards and sitting backwards on a chair as though you're hosting an after school special? And that's no joke, kids.
And that's no joke.
We'll be right back after these commercials.
It's just so it's funny that he's like parodying something that, like, yeah, I mean, if you want to record it, that's cool, but you know, you're making a character, you're taking it to the extreme, but there's a way to ask for consent that isn't as cringy as you made it. But if that's the way you want to do it, it's fine. I can understand why maybe the romance got turned off a little bit, but yeah, it was just a weird sequence. You know, it, like, consent didn't need to be parodied. I don't know. It was weird. But, you know, he eventually can't touch her thigh or breast, and so the physical connection is over, and so Larry, you know, is like, end session, and kind of, like, puts...
Yeah, as soon as she started, like, saying no to things, I gotta say, I thought the scene was not gonna end, and I thought Larry was gonna touch her anyway, and it was just going to devolve from there. I'm glad it didn't.
Yeah, like, maybe he ends this season with, like, 10 women, like, one woman every episode accusing him of sexual harassment.
Oh, no. That's the season-long story arc, is Larry becomes a huge sexual predator.
10 women lie.
Oh, no.
The Larry David story. Season 10 of Curb. So over at Jeff's, Jeff is all dismayed about the portrait, and they're having a welcome dinner for Andy and Cassie, who have moved from New York to L.A. That's why, Richard Kind is there with his wife again. Larry's very cranky because nobody asked about his cancer test coming back and what the results were. And so everyone kind of has excuses except Leon, who's just like, yeah, man, I just didn't ask. But, you know, I like Richard saying, I was going to call. And that's basically all he says.
He just kind of trails off.
Yeah. I was going to call. That's all. Like, but there's no but. It was funny. And in his in a little fit of rage, Larry stabs a tomato and it squirts juice all over Susie's beloved portrait. But while Jeff is kind of smirking with delight, Susie tells him to chew out Larry, and they both kind of, you know, this was a great unspoken bro moment where they both know the play, and without saying a word, there, you know, Jeff is like, where the fuck do you get off, you asshole?
Jeff's faux aggravation is so funny because he goes through, like, what kind of piece of shit, motherfucker, fuck you.
Yeah, but Susie buys it, surprisingly. Yeah, she can usually see through Jeff's bullshit, but she buys this.
Not now.
Yeah, no. And Larry is like, you know what? I'm going to take this picture and I'm going to make it right. And I'm not going to bring it back until it's better than it was before. You know, I didn't even like it. They didn't capture, you know, the light in your eyes and stuff like that. They're, like, just force feeding her bullshit. He's going to restore it and make it better.
I did love, I just wanted to touch on this scene, how no one can say anything actually positive about it. Like, Cassie's saying she loves the dimensions of it.
How big it is.
Yeah. And Richard Lewis loves how they captured her joy for life in her facial expression.
Yeah, just more BS. And when Andy goes, oh, we know somebody who restores the paintings, and Larry's like, shut the fuck up, and he picks up his knife and literally, like, threatens to stab him. Because Andy didn't know the play. He didn't know the angle. So over at the coffee shop, Milos is there, and wait, is it Milos or Milos?
It's spelled Milos, M-I-L-O-S, but yeah, it's pronounced Milos.
Okay. I didn't know if I was getting him mixed up with Milos, the tennis pro who sucked at tennis from Seinfeld. But he's making quick work of Larry's Spite store, and he's like two-thirds done. And he even offers to use the extra flooring for Larry's pantry free of charge. He's going to redo his pantry free of charge, and Larry's like, oh my gosh, please, I'll definitely pay you.
How big is Larry's pantry? What the fuck?
I know. Yeah, because it was like 12 stacks of flooring. You know?
Like, that's a lot of flooring.
It was like he bought way more. What is he going to do with the rest? I mean, do the whole kitchen while you're at it. Yeah, it was a lot. And at the same time, Milos gets a call from Susie, and he's like, oh, God. Or maybe it's not a call. Maybe it's a notification or something. But it's Susie leaving bad. He's getting bad recommendations all around town from Susie for whatever he did, you know, whatever misunderstanding with the deck happened. And so they talk about what an awful woman she is. And Milo shows up to Larry's house to drop off the flooring and maybe get started. And right there in Larry's foyer is the painting of Susie. And Milos just enters this blind rage.
Just yelling a bunch of Russian profanities at it.
Yeah. Is that what it said? Russian profanity? On the...
No, I just...
Oh, that'd be amazing.
It'd be very funny if it just said, like, bracket Russian profanities. I just inferred.
Yeah, yeah. I think that would have been awesome. It would have been expected. So back over at Lunetta, Larry is there meeting Alice, and he's very magnanimous. I mean, he's, like, being, you know, just very, you know, telling her everything she wants to hear. And she's very close to coming back to work. You know, he's even, I mean, this was a genius move, like complimenting her dog. Bring back Bogey. I miss Bogey. Mm-hmm. I mean, if that didn't, that must have won her over like right then. It was a done deal. She was going to drop everything and come back to work. But Larry sees Ted Danson walk by. And so he must side sit with Alice. And she doesn't like it immediately. As this crosses a line with her. But Larry grabs her by the wrist and holds her captive while Ted is satisfied seeing Larry side-sitting with somebody. Okay, all right, okay.
Well, he's satisfied, but in the same air, you can definitely tell he doesn't believe a fucking thing Larry's doing. He's like, all right, you piece of shit.
Oh, maybe that, yeah, there was that kind of okay. Like, all right, you got me this time, but I will catch you. Yeah, because he's holding Alice captive. And she storms out. You know, he just blew all of the goodwill that he had built up with her by, you know, forcibly making her sit next to him. The waiter comes by and he asks about the test results. So this waiter, like, was, you know, overhearing Larry talk about his cancer test to Cheryl. And he actually has genuine interest. He's like, how are those test results? Everyone here is like really pulling for you. And Larry says, yeah, they were negative. The waiter's like, oh, what a blessing. And Larry's like, oh, yeah, what? He, like, sarcastically blows him off. Like, this person's showing him, like, genuine human, you know, sympathy. Like, oh, was it a blessing? Thank you. I guess it's because he's so pissed at himself, just like the I don't give a fuck over after things went south with Cheryl, because he screwed himself over with Alice. I guess that's why it garnered the response it did, right?
It has to be, yeah.
Oh, is it a blessing? Oh, sorry. Sorry for caring you.
Caring about your life.
Yeah. So Jeff and Susie are in the car driving through the neighborhood, and Susie tells him to slow down because she sees the painting of her in the trash can, completely destroyed. I mean, there's like, holes in it.
Like, frame destroyed and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And... I want to point out, now that the painting is destroyed and we won't see it again, it's never explained where Larry got this or why Larry got this.
I mean, someone asked him, and he did say it was just commissioned, which, you know, kind of, but, I mean, you could probably find somebody on Etsy who would do this for you.
Yes, but I thought, like, that was leading to something.
Right. Yeah, like, maybe we'd meet the person or something like that. And I think why he did it is because he knows that Susie loves herself and would love the gift. I mean, and maybe a little bit that Jeff would hate it. I think that was probably, it was probably like 90% that and 10% for Susie. It was probably 90% a prank on Jeff. But then again, he said he already had it. Well, I mean, he still could want to prank Jeff, even though he knew she wanted something different. So, but because he did already know it was her birthday next week, and he already had the gift all lined up at the poker game. So, you know, it might have been a prank a long time in the making. You know, it would be funny, a giant picture of the wife he hates that he has to look at all the time. Jeff is, though, you know, he's very pleased with the fact that this painting is destroyed and he doesn't have to look at it. Larry is now giving a deposition in the sexual harassment case that is moving forward from Alice. And as Alice's lawyer wraps up her questioning, Larry's lawyer gets up to ask him some questions while reminding him he's still under oath, and begins grilling him about the bathroom use, demanding to know the truth as Frolic begins to play. And that's the end of the episode.
Whew. All right, Tim, did you like this episode?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, what am I doing? Oh. That's like the last thing that I asked.
Oh, yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah. Well, spoiler, right. But yeah.
Oh, Well, okay. And that's our episode. Bim, 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 bim. Anyway, what do you like for cover art this week, Tim?
Man, I mean, Larry cleaning the bathroom might have a good shot in it. I mean, everyone sitting around the table with Susie's picture is probably one of the best ways to go. Anything else? What are you thinking? We could literally get Larry side-sitting with somebody. You know, either holding Alice captive would probably be the funnier one, but Cheryl's right there too.
I really like the table in front of the portrait. I think that's a really good visual because everyone's just kind of staring at it like this hideous monstrosity.
Yeah.
All right, let's see what we can do about this week's description.
Okay.
So we had Larry's lawyer tries to settle the Alice situation, period. Larry gives Susie an extravagant gift, period.
All I would want to do is add to it, and I think that's antithetical to this bit, so.
Yeah, it's against the rules of the bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think we have before made it longer, but that's only if we make it, like, infinitely better, and I don't think we can in this case. I mean, I don't know.
It's not bad.
No, it's pretty good. Yeah, it's really good.
But, you know, that's just us using our human brains, Tim.
That's right. Why don't we try another bit where we're supposed to get it wrong? Curb your enthusiasm. I will put in the prompt here. And did you hear? I think they're making it better. They were like, they're releasing a new version. I don't know if it's available for the free tier yet, but please write a synopsis of episode 2 of season 10 of Curb Your Enthusiasm. Got to write side sitting. Let's see what ChatGPT version 3.5 has to say about this episode. And episode 2 of season 10 of Curb Your Enthusiasm, because they must start it the same way HBO does, titled Side Sitting, Larry David continues to navigate various social situations with his trademark mix of awkwardness and candor. In this episode, Larry finds himself in a series of uncomfortable encounters involving seating arrangements. He offends a fellow diner at a restaurant by refusing to sit on the same side of the booth, leading to a heated confrontation. Later, Larry's aversion to sitting in the middle seat of a car causes tension during a road trip with friends.
What?
Meanwhile, Larry's friend Richard Lewis undergoes a risky medical procedure, adding another layer of stress to the already tumultuous situations. As
Holy
always,
shit.
Larry's attempts to navigate these social minefields lead to hilarious misunderstandings and unintended consequences.
Oh,
like, how do you make up stuff that specific?
That's unique, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of outdid itself this week with just making up bullshit. Like,
it was doing so well until the car seat.
Yeah, the diner, no diner. Well, I mean, he does offend a fellow diner at a restaurant. He offends Cheryl.
And Alice.
Oh, and Alice, yeah, by refusing to sit. But then it says refusing to sit on the same side of the booth.
Yeah,
but
until it got to that part, it was doing pretty well.
But you could argue that was for refusing to sit on the same side of the booth he was sitting on. Like, go back to the same side you were on. Hey, I mean it that. I'm going to give it the benefit of the doubt and say maybe it means it that way. So, yeah, right up to the middle seat of a car. Because, you know, Larry David loves traveling, so of course he's going to go on a road trip with friends. Because, you know, he just finished college and he's taking a year off.
Yeah. Noted travel enthusiast Larry David.
Yeah. Noted road trip backpacker. Noted van life enthusiast Larry David. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, he loves life on the road. He hates the creature comforts of being at home.
God.
Pretty awful, ChatGPT, but that's why we love you.
All right, Tim, did you like this episode?
I'll try to hit the same tone. Yeah.
Yeah,
I did. I don't think I can give it a star, but I appreciated, you know, how it moved everything along and let me steal something from ChatGPT here. The hilarious misunderstandings and unexpected consequences of the episode, but I don't feel like it was star worthy. But of course, as always, enjoyable TV. What about you?
I'm thinking the same thing. I've enjoyed what we've seen so far of season 10. And I think I gave a star to episode 1, Happy New Year. I can't give one to Side Sitting just because Happy New Year I thought was miles better. But that doesn't mean I didn't like Side Sitting.
Right. Yeah. And I gave a star low to Happy New Year.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, normally when we have a strong finale, they kind of need that bridge episode in the middle that's like just kind of middling to get to. So maybe episode 3 will be amazing. But when we have a strong finale that we both like, I think it's tracked that episode 2 is like, yeah, this one was fine. You know, we got a little more story and things are moving along. But yeah, so I expect big things next week.
Big things. Speaking of next week we've got Season 10, Episode 3, Artificial Fruit. Original air date, February 2nd, 2020. And if you're looking at TV Guide that night, you are going to see Larry gets the chance to clear the air with Alice. And it goes to extreme length for a lunch. Wait, and it goes to extreme length? Did I write that wrong? Or is voice to text fucking me up again? Curb art. I put all of my faith into these voice to text situations, and it ends up not being right ever. If you're looking at TV Guide that night, you are going to see Larry gets the chance to clear the air with Alice and goes to extreme lengths for a lunch with Richard.
Huh. Wow. Going to extreme lengths for a lunch with Richard. That doesn't sound like Larry. But screwing things up with Alice again does. So looking forward to it. And I guess, is that it?
Yeah, I think that is it.
All right. For No Hugging, No Learning, I'm Tim Murphy.
I'm Ted Haldwell. Be good.